your fault. Baby, it's a lie. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, in no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. This is George Butler. What's coming up next, this second hour, is a rebroadcast of an original interview that Charlotte Littlefield and I had with John Perkins on October the 6th, 2007. He's the author, John Perkins is the author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. So we'll let you enjoy that. But first, we're going to come current, get you current with some of the current news. And we're going to make some comments and so forth. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. But she's going to be coming up in this brief broadcast in just a few minutes. Something very interesting happened to me Wednesday of this week. And it was interesting in the sense that I was looking around for Ebola information. So a friend of mine said, yeah, well, the Ebola gets its name from the Ebola River, you know. And he said, that's all he said. And I thought to myself, well, you know, I'm going to look that up and just see what that says, you know. So I went in there and to the Ebola River. This was on Wednesday. And it had a further reference off of Ebola River to the Yambuku, Yambuku, village. It's a small village as in Mangala District in the Northern Democratic Republic of the Congo. Previously, it was Zaire. Now it's being called the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It is best known as the center, Yambuku, as the center of the 1976 Ebola Zaire outbreak of Ebola. So I went in there, and to my surprise, I found that this is what it said about it, okay? About what they call the index case. That means the first case that was noticed in that village and first individual. The index case of Ebola was the headmaster of a local school, Mabolo Lukala, who began experiencing symptoms on 1 September 1976. Lukala had received an injection for malaria symptoms at the Yambuku Mission Hospital 5 days earlier. By September 5th, Mabolo was in critical condition with profuse bleeding from all the orifices. He died, it said, on September 8th. Well, what was interesting is that I went in, okay, and I thought, well, that was on Wednesday, okay, of this week. So I said, I'm going to go in and double check that. So I went in on Friday, which is yesterday, and lo and behold, okay, I began to get, went to the same page, brought up the same Ebola River reference. Yambuku was also a click-off down there, and so I went there and did that click-off to see where that would take me, and sure enough, it took me to Yambuku, the village of Yambuku, and I began to read at the very beginning that I had read before, but lo and behold, it had been edited from Wednesday to Thursday. It had been edited. And basically, what had been left out more than any other fact that I could find was this reference, okay, to this shot, this malaria shot, okay? So I thought that very suspicious. So I started digging around in there a little bit more, and I noticed on the two references, the one I downloaded and then the one live on the web, there was a reference, okay, to a bulletin, a health bulletin. So I downloaded that health bulletin, and within the health bulletin, it referred to the correct, I believe, the correct original reporting that the original index case, okay, did receive a malaria shot on the 1st of September, and then by the 8th, he had died. By the 5th, he had developed Ebola symptoms, and by the 8th of that same month, he died. So this is so mysterious that I'm going to put up on the site. If you go to thesecrettruth.com, thesecrettruth.com, go in there and look at those references and so forth. And I'm going to download the actual bulletin, the health bulletin, that was part of references in the end notes, okay? But my gosh, I mean, from Wednesday to Thursday, it changed on us. Strange things are happening out there. We have noticed over the years that if you get onto something like this, and I think the inference here is that something that though that original Ebola outbreak in Yambuku, it was linked for sure, according to the bulletin, with malaria shots. Not only the individual that indexed the first one, the first victim of the so-called original Ebola outbreak, but the subsequent ones also said that they also had received malaria shots. There were five or six subsequent deaths, and they had all subsequent infections had either received injections at the hospital or who had close contact with another case, it said. But anyway, go in there. I have those two click-offs here on hour two at the bottom there. And look at those bulletins and look at those references. I'm going to have them in red. I'm going to date the ones that I pulled up and so forth. And I want you to check that out for yourself just to get your own, just for your own opinion, you know. I mean, what is happening out here? Who knows for sure? I mean, it's so crazy, you know, at times. Another very, very interesting story broke on Wednesday, and it had to do with Game Changer, okay? There was an inside Game Changer salon, the Left's Action Network. Media Trackers broke a very important story, as far as I'm concerned. And they also had within the circle, there's a click off on this article too, at the bottom of hour two here, on thesecrettruth.com, go in there and scroll down to, well, it's the first program for this week. It would be August the 9th, and it would be the second hour. Right below the second hour there, you'll be able to pick up on this article. And basically, what happened was Game Changer Salon is a members-only Google group run by Billy Wimsatt, okay? Well, if you go in there, he's going to link and refer to a Cornel West, a Dr. Cornel West in there off of that site that he has. And, I mean, it's an extreme. What's troubling about this story to me personally more than anything else? This is the extreme left from the hard Maoist, communist, Marxist left into a socialist, being degrees of socialism all the way to light version of socialism, you could say, to Social Security, I guess. Recipients are experiencing that now. But what is more disheartening than anything, as far as my own personal opinion, is that we have these people that are diehard Obama fans and supporters, and they're liberal Democrats, okay? In this particular case, okay, they're supporting Obama to the very, very end, and this particular group, okay, They have a, in this article that I have a click off on, you can go download members, and there is one person in here linked to, I think, Jim Hightower's office that's on that list. But that's a very interesting link also. But anyway, go in there and link, look at that list that they have. There's 1,000 people, and they're all across America. There's one CNN reporter on there also. And it said in there in the article, she was asking people to come in and support her program and to do, you know, Twitters and all that good stuff, you know, to support what she was saying. But what I'll say this again before I, you know, let up on this particular item. The delusion that people that are still supporting Obama, after he's done everything, all these different actions that he's carried out, whether it's executive orders that were way overdone, he ignored Congress on the Libyan, civil war, and he broke the law, basically, the War Powers Act. The War Powers Act, he broke the law. He ignored them. He was supposed to give them reports after 60, 90 days. He did not. So, after all of the things that he's done, and now we've got this immigration thing, this illegal immigration, flooding people in. We don't know what his culpability was on organizing this thing. But all of these things, these people are still diehard Obama. They're far on the left. They're collective left. They're not going to bring us a free America. I'm sorry. They're so mesmerized and mind washed into this support for Obama. Obama is no one to support. I don't care. By this time, if you supported him the first election, okay, that's okay. You supported him the second, we'll give you a break on that. Now, after everything he's done for 6 years, I don't see how anyone can support Obama and his actions with a good conscience and still care about the country, because his actions do not really care about this country. The elitists behind the scenes are manipulating both the left and the right. They're taking the left and telling them about this capitalism and we need to crush it and profits should be eliminated. That will not get things done. Like I've said before, how about the little dress store owner out here? Let's take a little Hispanic woman in San Antonio that wants to go into business. Shouldn't she have a right to do that? And capitalism, the system of capitalism enables her to do that. Those kinds of examples are overlooked. There is corporate problems. It's crony capitalism that has fueled the corporate problem. But if the liberals did not join in with us on this Fed problem, then where are they coming from? So you liberal Democrats out there, the far right got onto the Fed problem and has been trying to expose that for 20, 30, 40 years. I don't see the liberal Democrats with us on that issue. So wake up out there, you liberal Democrats, and get with us on this Federal Reserve problem. If we get and reform, real reform in there, it will revolutionize help for the real poor, because that money operation, those money operations hurt the poor more than any other thing. Now, there was a couple of other articles that popped up over the week, and one was written by Paul Joseph Watson, and at Infowar.com. He comes out with some really good things sometimes, and it was about the funding of ISIS. And in that article, I suggest you go to Infowars and scroll down and click on the article. It's off of the carousel now, but it's lower than that. Go in there and read that article. And it's about the funding of ISIS, this very radical Islamist jihadist group, making all of these atrocities, creating all kinds of, committing all kinds of atrocities, north of Baghdad in that Anbar district and so forth. But you've got to get onto this thing and see them for what they are. They're the first hour we talked about psychopathic behavior. These people are past that. They are into raw savagery, the worst that we have seen. This maybe this century. I mean, the Germans committed a lot of atrocities too. The Russians killed a lot of their people. Mao Zedong killed a lot of their people. All these collectivist societies, and Hitler's was a collectivist, socialist, communist regime in the Soviet Union, and a Mao collective thing in China, they've killed millions. So the collectivists have killed where the real killing fields are. The Cambodian thing was another killing fields. But basically, you have out here a funding going on, evidently, by ISIS of the Persian Gulf, Qatar, and all those, and they're funneling that money through Kuwait to these, and Saudi Arabia's in there also. So basically, it looks like to me the overall strategy, geopolitical strategy at this time, is to overcome the Shiite faction in Iraq, and then create a severe, extreme Islamic, you could say, Sunni state, caliphate, as an offset against a rising, powerful Iran. They couldn't get Obama to commit to bombing Iran and taking out some of the nuclear capability. So I think this all of a sudden pops up, and they're going to run this extreme jihadist group in there as an offset to Iran. That's sort of the way I see it right now. Another item that popped up is Dianne Feinstein, our esteemed senator from California, who is a gun grabber deluxe, one of the worst ever. She wanting to just, every time something pops up, she wants to grab more and more guns. Well, she's stating that ISIS is going to come in there and attack us from our backyards. So, Miss Feinstein, you're going to be unarmed in your backyard. I tell you what, I'm going to be armed in my backyard. I don't care what you say about gun control. When it comes down to it, if there's a, terrorist in my backyard, I think it's better to be armed than disarmed, like you've been proposing for years. And all we hear is the same old rhetoric from you, Feinstein. Oh, we got to grab those guns, and they're the evil guns. Yeah, but those evil guns might save you from a terrorist if they're going to be in your backyard. So I think that makes sense. The first hour, I interviewed Harrison Coley, and we talked about ponerology. A political ponerology, the science of evil, of political evil. And Andrew Lobezeski is the author of that book. He passed away in 2007. He did finally get it published in about 2005, a couple of years before he passed away. And it's just a fine book, and I recommend it highly. So come in to thesecrettruth.com and order that book. It's off of the Red Pill Press site. And read that book. It's a fine book, and it is about psychopathic behavior and psychopaths in general, and how they manipulate people, how they use spellbinding techniques and so forth. But anyway, we want to thank everyone out there for listening to thesecrettruth.com. Thesecrettruth.com is our new site. It's a WordPress site. We have a click off there that you can go back to the old site. We're going to try to put up all of those hours that we did over the last nearly 8 years on the days that we did those on the old sites. And the old site is broken down into the different years. So anyway, go in there and check that out and take a look at it and see what you think. But we've got a country, a world in turmoil. We've got the neocons in there pushing for more and more attacks. We've got the Gaza war with Israel. You can't call it a war. They're sitting ducks over there. They've got the Hamas that keeps firing rockets into Israel. That's not helping either. So, and then the extreme right in Israel, they want to drive the Palestinians out. Totally. That's what this is really about. And I think, General Palin realized that years ago, a true hero of the state of Israel. And that's when he broke with the leading membership, the leading elites, the governing elites of Israel and decided to go do something else and try to, you know, pick up the pieces and try to make peace with the Palestinians. Since 48, the shrinking ownership and occupation of the Palestinians and those living in the West Bank has shrunk. It's getting down to little or nothing. And so, you know, the Israelis want them out. There are oil interests off the shore that the Gaza as a nation or the Palestinian territories as a nation could lay claim to. I think that's a really big interest. If they could get and lay claim to those oil interests, it might just put the Gaza and the West Bank on good economic footing, and maybe they can at least create some kind of a peaceful country. There are rumblings of entrepreneurship between some of the Israelis and the Palestinians. I think the leadership on both sides has always been a problem. Thank you very much. We're going to end with this rebroadcast. Thank you. Good night.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with...
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Charlotte, how are you doing tonight anyway?
I'm doing excellent, George. How are you doing?
Okay, we've got two guests tonight. John Perkins is going to be our first hour guest. Call the economic hitman. He hasn't signed in yet, but we're waiting now for a call any minute. And then during our second hour, Colonel Dan Marvin, Dangerous Dan they call him. And he, boy, he's special forces out of Vietnam, and he'll have a story to tell us during the second hour. And we might bring him in a little bit earlier tonight anyway. But you were in the military too, weren't you, Charlotte, for a while?
Yes, George. I served enlisted Navy 1985 to 1990. I was an electrician's mate. I served on a destroyer tender and a submarine tender.
Okay, and I served 3 years in the Army over in Europe primarily. I spent 2 years in Germany.
Right,
basically.
And then I did my Army officer time.
Oh, that's right, and you were number one in your class too, weren't you?
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, you were, academically, I think, right?
Right. I was the academic honor graduate of an OCS class. But
yeah, well, that's saying something, though, Charlotte.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. I can't say that war is fun and all that other business, but the camaraderiness, the friendships, was a good experience.
You gave some, didn't you give some instruction on what, Geneva Convention or human rights?
I used to give human rights training to a lot of the new people that came through United States Army South Headquarters Company.
You know, the School of the Americas?
It's gone now, of course, but it's moved. Uh-huh.
They renamed it, okay?
Sure.
They're calling it the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation. Now, who can
WinSec.
Remember that?
WinSec.
Huh?
Yeah, WinSec.
Yeah, WinSec. And anyway, I started reading through them, their description on Wikipedia tonight. And anyway, we're going to be bringing in John Perkins in just a second. Let me tell you a little bit about John Perkins before we bring him on the air. He's written two books that are explosive. The original book that was a New York Times bestseller was Confessions of an Economic Hitman. He followed that up later on with another book that's just fresh off the press. In fact, they published it this year, and it's entitled The Secret History of the American Empire. And John was trained early on in what he did, and he worked for a large consulting company out of Boston. And later on, he had second thoughts about what he was doing, and today, John Perkins works along with his daughter to make the world a better place. Welcome, John Perkins, to our program.
Thanks a lot. It's great to be here with you, George and Charlotte.
I didn't describe everything that you've done in the past. I thought we'd probably leave that up to you. How did you get started? These two books are sort of tied together, are they not?
Well, in a way they are. Confessions of an Economic Hitman really talks about my life as an economic hitman. And Secret History gets into things that a lot of other people did. After I wrote Confessions, a lot of other economic hitmen and jackals, those are the ones who assassinate presidents and other people, sort of came out of the closet and talked to me about what they had done, so I include some of their stories and really bring the whole thing up today, talking about what's going on right now in Latin America and the Middle East and Africa and Asia. And also, for me, a big part of Secret History is that it really spells out a plan for how we can change the world, how we can make it a better world for ourselves, our children, and grandchildren.
I noticed in your latest book, The Secret History of the American Empire, you have a you write about an RAN organization.
And Rainforest Action Network, yes.
And so what you're tending to do now is you're working within organizations like this to make this world a better place. Is this some of your latest activities?
Yeah, and actually I've been doing that since 1990. I've been doing a lot of work with nonprofits, and I think that, you know, one of the reasons I talk about this in the book is I think they really have lighted a way to how we can turn things around. What we've managed to do in the last several decades is create the world's first truly global empire. And we've done it for the most part without the military. We've done it through economic hitmen, unlike any other empire in the history of the world. This one's not been created through the military. It has, however, created an extremely dangerous world for us, our children and grandchildren. You know, everyone knows now we've got global warming. We've got incredible amounts of serfdom and virtual slavery around the world in order to fill sort of our demand for consumer goods. We've created a world that has a great deal of starvation and misery, and out of that has come a lot of desperation and, as a result, terrorism, which isn't good for any of us. And I'm a very, very staunch patriot. My family fought in the American Revolution and every major war in the United States since. And I really want to see us turn this around. And I have great hope that we can do it because this particular empire, unlike other ones, is truly run by the corporations. It's not run by a single sole emperor. It's run by a few men and a few women who run our biggest corporations. Because of that, it's easier, perhaps, to change it. Because it's not a military dictatorship or empire, we don't have to confront it militarily as we did in the 1770s against England. We can do this through economics and through the way we buy things and through the way we deal with corporations. And some of these nonprofit organizations like Rainforest Action Network and the Pachamama Alliance and Amnesty International and many others have really been leaders in this and have shown us that we truly can change corporations. And they've really given us a model for doing this. And now we just need to do it on a little bit bigger level.
So you're saying that today, these corporations have not taken on a military aspect at this point.
Well,
they're still business and a commercial aspect. They're providing business and services to people.
Well, yeah. What I'm really saying is that every other empire in history has an emperor who's primarily imposed that empire through military takeovers of other countries. This one hasn't done it that way. The emperor here is what I call the corporatocracy, which are the men and women who run our biggest corporations. This isn't a conspiracy theory at all. These people don't have to conspire to make this happen. I can talk about that later if you want. But they are the ones who really pull the strings. We don't have any elected officials in this country that aren't beholden to corporation money to get them elected. And they basically control our mainstream media. And yet these corporations are totally dependent on you and me and all of your listeners to buy their goods and services. And when we really let them know that we want change, as we've done for cleaning up rivers, for getting rid of aerosol cans, for destroying the ozone layer, for opening the doors wider to women and blacks and other minority groups, and getting rid of trans fats and foods and many other things, when we really let them know that we want change, they do change. They have to change or they go out of business.
Right. John, this is Charlotte. Welcome to the broadcast tonight. So basically, when you were saying that they've done this not militarily, what they've done, and I read this in your writings, is basically they gave impossible loans to the countries so that, you know, they couldn't pay these loans back. And they would, you know, essentially have late fees, if you will. And those late fees turned into favors. And so, you know, that's kind of how it goes. The type of economic system is like it's a debtor system. And it kind of breeds a sort of indebtedness to the creditor.
Yeah.
And in your book, you've called the corporatocracy is the creditors.
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head, Charlotte. We've created this empire, economic hitmen like I did, in doing many different things. But perhaps the most common is what you've really identified, and that is that we will identify a third world country that has resources our corporations covet, like oil, and then arrange a huge loan to that country. Do I need to take a break?
Yeah, we got to take a break here, but we'll be right back, okay? We'll continue about these. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Welcome back, John Perkins, to our program. You were saying something about oil when we went to break.
Right. I was kind of discussing how economic hitmen work. And
go ahead and give us an idea of what went on in your own life and how it's going on today.
Well, you know, we did many different things, but typically the most common was that we would identify a third world country, as I was saying, that had resources that our corporations covet, like oil. Then we'd arrange a huge loan to that country from the World Bank or one of its sister organizations, but the money wouldn't actually go to the country. Instead, it would go to our own corporations to build big infrastructure projects in that country, like power plants, ports, highways, industrial parks, things that would benefit a few rich families in that country, as well as our own corporations, but really didn't help the majority of the people, the poor people, because they don't use much electricity, if any at all. They don't have the skills to get jobs in industrial parks. They don't have cars for the highways. They don't use the ports. But they and the whole country would be left holding this huge debt, and it would be so big that they couldn't possibly repay it. And that was by design, so that at some point we would go back to them, to that country, and say, listen, you can't pay your debts, so give us a pound of flesh. Sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies, or vote with us on the next critical United Nations vote, or send troops in support of ours to someplace in the world like Iraq. And on the few occasions when we economic hitmen fail, and I talk in the books about how I failed in Panama with Omar Torrijos and in Ecuador with Jaime Roldós, on those occasions the jackals step in, and these are men who are trained to overthrow governments or assassinate their leaders. And in the case of Torrijos of Panama and Roldós of Ecuador, both of them were assassinated because I failed to corrupt them. I failed to bring them around.
So Torrijos, you have a treatment in there. He was truly a nationalist and a patriot of Panama. Would you describe him in that way?
Absolutely. And I like the man very much. He had tremendous integrity. He was a human being. He had his flaws. But I remember, one time him saying to me, listen, I don't need your money. I've got a decent house. I've got a good car. I've got good food. What I need is to have my people of Panama be free and be reimbursed for all the damage that you've caused here, basically as an imperialistic power since the turn of the century. And also I need to have the right to negotiate with the Japanese to build a sea level canal and to help other countries in this hemisphere that are standing up to right-wing dictators, and you're telling me I can't do that. So I don't want your money, but I do want to have the freedom to make my country what it needs to be and to use our resources to pull our own poor people up by their bootstraps. And so he wouldn't be corrupted.
There's a good quote here. Excuse me just a second. I wanted to just inject this for a second. This is one of his quotes. You may rest assured that in my negotiations, this is Torrijos being quoted, you may rest assured that in my negotiation with the U.S., you will always find us standing on our feet, or dead, but never on our knees, never.
That was his attitude, and he felt that his country had been terribly exploited by us, which it had been, and he wasn't going to allow that to continue anymore, and that all of his predecessors had allowed that to happen. They were basically puppets to Washington. He was not such a puppet. And the dilemma for me was that I deeply respected his integrity, but I had a job to do, which was to corrupt him, to take him out of integrity. And there was a side of me that didn't want that to happen, because I wanted to continue to believe in this man who I really liked and thought very highly of. On the other hand, I knew that if I failed to corrupt him, then something more dire would happen to him. He'd either be overthrown in a coup or assassinated. And so for me, it was a terrible personal dilemma. And in the end, I did fail. He kept his integrity and was assassinated.
We have a man coming on during the second hour. I don't know if you're familiar with him. His name is Colonel Dan Marvin.
That sounds familiar.
And he's a special forces man out of Vietnam, and he knows all about jackals and all that stuff.
Uh-huh, I bet he does.
And he's really, really into that. So that'll be our guest during the second hour. So Torrijos was taken out, what, with some kind of a bomb on a plane or something? Or
yeah, you know, his twin otter, private plane, basically exploded in a fireball. And it was interesting because just 3 months earlier, the president of Ecuador, Jaime Roldós, who I also failed to bring around because he had very similar integrity to Torrijos, had the same thing happen to him. It was basically the same airplane, a twin otter. And in both these cases, there's no doubt in my mind, and there's a tremendous amount of evidence to point toward the fact that these were CIA-sponsored assassinations.
John, you say that in your book and many occasions that you'd like to, I don't want to jump completely to the reform and the changes you'd like to see because there's a whole lot of story to be told about what happened. But about the corporation, you feel that the corporation's been used to bring us this far, you know, and that the corporation needs to be revamped. Have you thought of any particular laws or anything specific besides the general thought that the corporation can be used for the good?
Well, there's certainly a lot we could do legal-wise. For example, you know, really cut back on the power that lobbyists have in Washington. In fact, that power has grown tremendously, corporate lobbyists. Also, election finance reform would go, it would be a big step in this direction. But I think when it comes right down to it, Charlotte, is that we the consumers, have the power. We need to exercise that power. And we've been extremely successful at it when we have exercised that power, as I mentioned earlier, getting corporations to clean up terribly polluted rivers in this country back in the 70s, rivers that were on fire in the Midwest and other places. And just recently, Tyson's, the biggest chicken manufacturer in the country, ran a full-page ad in the New York Times saying, because you, the consumer, have demanded it, we're not putting antibiotics into our chickens anymore. There have been a number of successes like that, and we mentioned Rainforest Action Network earlier, which has had tremendous success at getting some of the biggest and toughest corporations in the world to stop cutting rainforest and old-growth trees. Corporations like Boise Cascade and Citicorp and Kinko's and Home Depot and many others have bought into this program of no longer using products from trees, from rainforests and old-growth trees. We've been really successful. And now I think what we need to do is ramp that up a notch and get the corporations to redefine their very goal. Currently, their goal is to make windfall profits, to make a few rich people a lot richer. And that's not serving any of our interests. That's creating a very dangerous world. We need to get them to change that to being good citizens, being good communities. In fact, dedicating themselves to creating a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world, something our children will be proud to inherit. And I think we have every reason to believe that we can make that happen. Because after all, we've got to remember that all these corporations are filled with people like you and me, and even their presidents and CEOs are human beings usually with children or nephews and nieces and often with grandchildren. And they don't want to see Florida sink into the ocean. They don't want to see the world destroyed by terrorism.
Well, the ultimate problem is an emotional one with these men that lead the world and dominate these. Aren't they thinking themselves as such great men sometimes that it's hard to get them to think differently than that?
I'd love to talk about that, after the next
Okay, that's just the whole psychological. We'll be right back, John. This is getting good, okay?
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, all debt has become mathematically impossible to repay, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. Welcome back, John Perkins.
Hi, it's great to be back.
Charlotte's going to do some bookkeeping. Charlotte?
Yes.
Why don't you give us a lowdown and explain John Perkins' sites on where you can get his books and things like that.
Right. For the benefit of the listening audience, John Perkins has a website. It's johnperkins.org. And on his website, there's a lot of very neat and interesting things happening. He's got a great area called the Global Dialogue Center, and you want to go check that out. And, John, I believe your book is available in most major bookstores right now, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, and on online, too. Yeah, both books now have been on the New York Times bestseller list, and they're very available.
Right. But the website, that's devoted to your efforts to change the world, to make the world a better place, and we appreciate that a lot. Is there anything else you'd like to draw the listening audience attention to?
Well, you know, just I just like to leave hope with everyone, because it seems as though there's an awful lot of hopelessness going on as I travel around the country, which I've been doing for almost 3 years now since Confessions came out, talking to people, giving speeches, et cetera.
I think a part of it is a lot of people feel we understand what's happening. However, we're stuck within this web of a debt-based, you know, economic system. And the choice is, you know, run the treadmill, you know, join the corporation, you know, whatever. And it seems very... the future looks blighted sometimes, economically. Now, spiritually, emotionally, and all those other things, that's not necessarily the case, but...
Yeah, and some of your messages on that last break were very much about that and very much to the point, you know, and in many respects, the techniques of economic hitmen have come home to roost. We use these successfully against other countries, and now they're being used against us, against our people here, this business of making sure that we all have so much debt. I remember when I first went to work as an economic hitman back in the 70s, I was making pretty good money, but it took me 6 months to get a credit card. And when my daughter entered high school, she was swamped with credit cards. And this whole thing of putting this credit crunch on people, and people go to school, they come out of school with horrendous debts and have to pay them off. And the way to do that is by working for the corporation. And it really is a system that's very much like what we used to do in developing countries, third world countries, and now we're doing to ourselves. But, you know, we've got to put an end to that, and we've all got to have the courage to stand up and make this a better world.
John, I have a good question for you that I think George would appreciate also. You mentioned on one of your audio tapes about Asia on your website, if the listening audience digs into the Moments of Insight. There's a bunch of audio tapes, and on your audio tape pertaining to Asia, you talked about how you, while the country's in a distressed situation where they're, you know, having late fees, if you will, and those late fees become favors, one of the favors was to package up infrastructure and to privatize it.
Right.
For the benefit of the corporation. And I believe that is happening to the United States as well.
We're seeing it all the time. I mean, yes, this has been a big ploy overseas with these countries for a long time of privatizing their utility companies, their electric companies, their water and sewage companies, their education systems, their prisons, and making the government sell all of those off to our corporations, which then run them at very big profits. And, of course, we're seeing something similar happening in this country now. We're even seeing our army privatized. And, of course, that's making a lot of news these days with things like Blackwater. But there is that going on with the army. It's going on with our education system. It's going on with our prison system. It's been happening with our utility system. And with some of these things are even being sold off to Japanese or Chinese companies, which makes most Americans very upset to hear that some of our biggest assets are being sold off to foreigners, and yet we have expected people throughout Asia and Africa and Latin America and the Middle East to accept us, our companies owning their primary assets. For a long time, we've expected them to do that.
Yeah, we have a problem, you know, going on here in Texas now with these toll roads.
Yeah.
They have become a really big money maker. They're leasing them in Texas to these foreign companies. One country's company, Centra Corporation, is a Spanish corporation.
Right. They're also buying and leasing toll roads in New Jersey and many other parts. It's not just in Texas.
Yeah, Indiana, I think they're into. There's an Australian corporation that's really big banking concern that's coming in strong with purchasing some of these rights and so forth.
Yes. You know, but we can stop that, George, and we must.
We're working feverishly to do it now. But they've got so much money behind them, and they've got people convinced with ideas that are very simple ideas, but they're capturing sometimes.
Just don't use them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah. Well, we're trying to counter them with better ideas, right?
Well, I didn't today, and it took me an extra 10 minutes, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well,
but
you know,
George is alluding to that, to the media, to the marketing, the brain, you know, the brain trips that they put people on.
Yeah.
I would tell people, you know, that you know, right there, the profits, the proceeds are going to a foreign corporation. They're like, no, they think it's going to the Texas Department of Transportation.
Yeah,
you know, it's just amazing.
The deception that goes on and the use of words is phenomenal. And, you know, shows like yours are doing tremendous to things to bring this out. And there's a lot of books out now, a lot of movies out now, like The Constant Gardener and Blood Diamond and Syriana, that expose a lot of these different things. And it's incredibly important. But each one of us needs to take actions every day to keep this from happening. And you know, one of the most positive things that I see is that I know a lot of high up executives in corporations. I have for many years, including CEOs. I have never met one that I would consider anything close to evil or bad. But these are people that have children and grandchildren. They want to create a better world, but they're stuck in this paradigm that says we've got to make greater profits, windfall profits. That's the goal of the corporations. And whenever we really set our hearts and minds and come together as organizations to let them know that that's not the most important function, that it's more important that they save rainforests, that they clean up rivers, that they hire minorities, and so on and so forth, on and on down the line, then they do it, and they're forced to do it. And I have kind of an interesting story along those lines. You mentioned Rainforest Action Network earlier, Charlotte. Well, a few years ago, they went after Mitsubishi, which at the time was considered the largest destroyer of rainforest in the world. Most people wouldn't know that, but Mitsubishi is a very big organization. Rainforest Action Network has never lost a campaign. And this one became pretty ugly between Randy Hayes, the founder of Rainforest Action Network, and a senior executive at Mitsubishi. They really locked horns. Eventually, Rainforest Action Network won, and Mitsubishi signed an agreement to do a better job, as every corporation has that Rainforest Action Network's gone up against. It's an organization with only 20 people at the time and $2 million budget, not a big organization, Rainforest Action Network. Anyway, a couple of months later, I happened to be at a meeting of about 30 people, a conference, where these two men were in attendance. And on Saturday night, Randy Hayes and I decided to go up on top of this hill. This is in California, looking out over the Pacific Ocean. There was a full moon that night. We decided to go up to the hot tub on top of the hill and take a six-pack of beer up with us. When we got there, we discovered the guy from Mitsubishi was already in the hot tub, and he had his own beer in there. And I don't think he really wanted to do this, but he had very little choice but to invite us to join him. Well, I have to admit, I was a little frightened at this point. I was a little anxious because here we were, you know, in this hot tub up on the mountain looking over the Pacific, full moon, beer flowing, three naked guys. I'm the only thing.
Man, I tell you.
I'm the only thing between these two guys who'd been locking horns and arch enemies just a few weeks, a few months earlier. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen. But after a couple of beers, the guy from Mitsubishi raises his beer can. He says, "Randy, I have to thank you. You know, I get kids. I expect to have grandchildren. I want to take them to the Amazon and to the great forests of British Columbia." And,
Yeah.
A lot of executives wanted to do the right thing, but we couldn't until you guys forced us look at what we were doing.
When you strip off that glorified false self and you get down to that core real self, maybe we can make some change happen. Huh?
Absolutely.
That's basically what I see the dynamics that was going on there. We're going to have to take another quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with
Charlotte Littlefield Brown.
Welcome back, John Perkins, to this last segment. This thing was getting good now. I'll tell you, that we're stripping away those big egos and super egos and supercharged glorified selves, right?
Exactly, yes. You know, what this Mitsubishi executive experience with Randy Hayes, the head of Rainforest Action Network, brought home to me is that this sort of thing is happening all over the world. Corporate executives all over who want to do something better than what they're currently doing, but they're afraid to. They're just afraid that they'll lose their jobs, as the guy from Mitsubishi was, if they go to their stockholders or their directors and ask to do a better job. But when the people come after them and demand that they do something differently, not cut rainforest trees or clean up rivers or get rid of aerosol cans or whatever it happens to be, not turn over the highways, the turnpikes, the toll roads to private corporations. When we insist upon that and follow our insistence by taking actions like not driving on those highways, then things begin to change because it comes to their attention. They have to do something, and then they can turn around and do the right thing. And if we really focus on doing this on a big level where we let all these corporations know that what we expect of them is to dedicate themselves to creating a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world for every child everywhere, we will be successful. It's going to take some work, and it's going to take a lot of focus on our part. And in the process, you know, we have to realize that I just had a grandchild last week, the first one I've ever had. My daughter gave me. And it's a wonderful experience, and yet it's also a tremendous responsibility. I realized that my grandson cannot expect to enjoy a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world unless every child in Africa, Asia, Latin America, the Middle East has that same expectation. We live on a very small and interrelated planet today, and we need to understand that we cannot have homeland security here in this country until we see the whole world as our homeland, which it is.
Right. John, you said some interesting things about, how did you put it? You said, the White House cannot be trusted. We should take what the media says and read behind the lines, put it in perspective. We can't trust. Who else did you say? The media, the White House, and the Congress, you know, the whole deal, because they're obviously bought off by the corporatocracy. John, what do you think about microloans in those other countries?
Well, I was on the board of a nonprofit back in the early 90s that was one of the pioneers in giving microloans to Mayans in Central America. It was very, very successful, and I think it's a wonderful thing to do. In recent years, there's been sort of a co-opting of some of that by some of the big commercial banks. And I'm not sure that that's wrong, but it needs to be closely watched to make sure that they continue to adhere to the principles of microloans, which is to really help the people in those communities be able to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and not just to see these as a profit-making gimmick for the banks.
Right. What about, can I jump on to money creation with you? The Federal Reserve System brings the money into existence, you know, based on, I'm sure, certain requirements or whatever. But the bottom line is the money that is in circulation is created out of thin air.
Well, it is, and you know, we get away with that in this country because the dollar is the world standard currency. And I talk in the books about how that happened, that we were on the gold standard until 1971 when Nixon took us off. And he took us off because other countries were calling in the debts that we owed them in gold, and we couldn't pay. So he basically arbitrarily took us off the gold standard. He used all kinds of economic arguments for it, but the real reason was we just couldn't pay the debt. But that put the dollar in a vulnerable position because it no longer could claim to be the world currency until 73, when, as a result of the deal that I helped to strike when I was in Saudi Arabia at that time, the OPEC, under the orders of Saudi Arabia, basically, and the details are in the book, OPEC agreed never to sell oil for anything other than U.S. dollars, which put us on the oil standard. So today you cannot buy oil on the world market for anything other than dollars, which means the dollar is the world currency. So that also means that we can print dollars, and people have to accept their value because they are the world currency. If, in fact, we could buy oil on the world market for something other than dollars, like euro or yen or something like that, then the U.S. would be very weakened, and one of our debtor countries, like Japan or China or some other country, could call in our debt in some other currency, and we'd be back to the position we were in 71, except with nowhere to go with it, because we couldn't pay those debts in other currencies. And that is exactly, you know, why we fear Iran right now, because Iran has opened an oil exchange where they will sell oil for something other than dollars, although at this point nobody's buying, nobody's daring because of our threats to attack Iran if in fact that moves forward. I think that's the real reason behind our threats in Iran, more than the nuclear weapons fear. It's about oil, and it's about the U.S. dollar, supporting the U.S. dollar.
Because if too many of these countries start jumping in and start selling their oil in other than dollars, then that dollar's gone.
Well, that's correct.
And then you got China over there with all these foreign reserves in dollars and these U.S. securities in dollars. I mean, we've got real problems with the dollar, do you think?
Well, we do if in fact we go off the oil standard. If oil is can be bought and sold for something other than the dollar, we have the potential for problems. One thing we have to remember, though, is that as long as China as long as we're so indebted to China, they're not going to want us to go into bankruptcy. It's the old saying that if you owe the bank $1,000, they'll come after you, but if you owe them $1 million, you're their partner.
Right.
And we owe so much money to China and Japan and some other countries that at this point they wouldn't want to see us go into bankruptcy.
But it's probably to their advantage to take those dollar credits and convert them into real estate or something that's real, tangibles. Isn't this sort of going to be the play, maybe slowly? So they're going to unwind the dollar position, but slowly, I would think.
It really depends on the politics, too. You know, like if they really wanted to hurt us, they could. But the question is, what would they gain from it?
Their own assets would suffer, yes.
Yeah, and we also have to remember that right now, all of our big corporations, they don't really care whether they're located in the United States, frankly, or Dubai, or Shanghai, or where their headquarters are. And they're all maneuvering around. For the first time in history, we have this empire that it's not really an American empire. I say that in the book, but it is, because right now, corporations' headquarters, most of them are here, but they don't see the world that way. They don't respect any country's borders.
Would you say that London has been always a financial center for centuries?
Well,
it's been a real big financial center for international financing and of all these corporations. Has that been its duties? Or, I mean, its mission?
That's certainly been true in the past. But today, what we have to think about is, you know, I grew up in a world where we saw the globe as this big ball with about 180 some odd countries, and most of them didn't have much influence over any others except a few, like the Soviet Union and us, and then it was primarily us. Before that, it had been like Spain and Portugal and England and so on. But today, the geopolitics has changed radically, and we might rather view it as this big ball, the globe with 180 some odd countries, and these huge clouds drifting around outside of it. And these clouds don't recognize any national borders. They don't recognize laws. These are the big corporations.
Saying transnational types of corporations.
Yeah, and they're striking deals with the Chinese. They're creating partnerships with the Chinese right and left. And so, you know, when we talk about, it isn't like the Cold War where it's like China versus the United States, because now we've got this other factor, which is these huge corporations. And so we've got something that's emerged that's totally different from anything we've ever seen in history before. And that's another reason why we, the people, have to do something totally different. We have to break the pattern. Empires never survive. They always collapse. And when they do, traditionally, there's a vacuum. You get wars, a new empire. We need to break that mold and say, we don't want this empire to collapse. We want to transform it into a model that will create a sustainable...
A transmogrification of it into something better. Is
something,
that...
Absolutely. Something that will be a model for the rest of the world so that we can move forward and create a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world for our children.
And poverty and the inequality.
Yeah.
You know, John, tonight this interview did not go along the standard hitman, economic hitman interview, did it?
Oh, you're right. That's good.
Maybe this is the beginning of the way that we're changing things, huh?
I think it is. And, you know, get out there and protest that the privatization of your turnpike and water system and anything else that happens.
We're doing that, I'll tell you, boy.
Well, your utility company, too, your electric company, remember.
Right. John Perkins, thank you very, very much for your interview. And really, you're out there with your daughter, Jessica, trying to create a better world and... Congratulations on working towards that goal.
Thanks very much. You too. You guys keep up your great work of spreading the word.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Night.